I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hi, folks. This week we are doing something a little bit different. Instead of bringing you a little introduction with the four of us cracking jokes and being silly, we're going to throw right to our interview this Friday. We had the pleasure of sitting down with past Sick Boy guest and friend Justin Baldoni. He had reached out early last week asking if he could come on the podcast to talk about his latest movie, which is now streaming on Disney Plus, called Clouds. And of course, when Justin Baldoni comes knocking on your door, you can't say no. So we had the pleasure of sitting down and talking to that beautiful, beautiful, gentle human being all about the process of making another heart-wrenching, eye-watering, beautiful, emotional film, which is Clouds. We talk about Zach's story and what inspired Justin to make this film and what went behind it. Really, really beautiful conversation. I hope you enjoy this as much as we did. And we'll be back on the other end of the conversation, the four of us, to just have a little check-in. All right, hope you enjoy this, and we'll see you on the other side. That's it. Justin, first of all, I want to say hello. Second of all, a quick little intro here. About a month ago, I was sitting down with my therapist and we were kind of digging into who I am. And one of the things that my therapist told me was that I have it written down here, I am emotionally avoidant. And so he was like, I've got some homework for you. My therapist loves homework, and I love that about him. And so he was like, for your homework, what I want you to do is I want you to find movies that you typically would avoid watching because of the fact that it will lead you into an emotional place that you don't feel comfortable going. Because I told him I really don't like watching movies that make me think about, you know, my own mortality. As much as I talk about it all the time on like this show and in talks and stuff, and I avoid movies that like make me feel quote unquote sad. And so he was like, "I want you to go seek these movies out and watch them, and then like find space in you to sit with those feelings." And I was like, "This homework doesn't sound very fun." And then a couple of weeks later, my dog died. And it was like the hardest thing I've ever gone through. And I was like, oh, sweet. Homework done. I went through that. I don't need to watch any fucking movie. I've Bigby died. I've gone through that. I processed it. I'm good. And then I get a text from you last week about coming on the show to talk about your new movie Clouds, which is now streaming on Disney Plus. And I was like, sweet. Right. Clouds. Okay. Yeah, I think I know what this movie's about. And the last movie I watched of Justin Baldoni's, 5 Feet Apart, really ripped my chest wide open. Okay, yeah, I got this. And this morning, I decided to watch it. I literally stopped watching it. The movie just ended about 20 minutes ago.
I don't know how you're coherent right now.
Dude, my sinuses are so blocked up. And like my nose is big. My eyes are so, like, I'm so dehydrated right now. So anyway, all that to say, I just wanted to say this so that if my therapist is listening, I am doing homework. Your fucking homework, done. Dude. Okay. And boy, oh boy, did that movie hit deep. I mean, what a beautiful film. What just like an emotionally charged, beautiful film about a very, very special human being. I know that Zach, the lead, the character that this movie is based off of, you've met him in real life. He was a part of My Last Days, which was your show that ran for quite a while there. Why don't you tell us, Justin, just like, first of all, what was the process of meeting Zach? And at what point, like throughout that, did you start to realize, like, you know, how important someone like himself, his story would be to many people in the world?
Well, first of all, the fact that you watched Clouds on a Monday morning, like that's a lot.
Yeah.
Jeremy.
I've got a lot to do this week, Justin. Okay.
he wrote me this morning and said, he goes, oh fuck, I'm watching it now. and I just said, great morning watch.
See, Taylor and I watched it last night. We were smart about this. We had some time to sleep and digest and now we're ready to go.
The other thing I want to say is, first of all, I love talking to other dudes who talk about therapy. Ooh. It's one of the reasons why, you know, this is one of my favorite podcasts, if not the only podcast I've ever requested to be on. and I appreciate, Jeremy, you sharing that about your therapist. I have one thing to say, and that is not everybody lives with a chronic illness that is scientifically, statistically shown to possibly prematurely end your life. So there are reasons why you are like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just want to say, like, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Your therapist sounds awesome, and I love that he wants to crack that open. Mm-hmm. But most of us are running from our mortality. Mm-hmm. You have to live with it. So I just want to, like, you know, you're doing a podcast, for God's sakes. Like, this is your job now. Your job is to talk about and bring comedy into this space where you are confronting your mortality. So I wouldn't necessarily say you are emotionally avoidant because you are making yourself go there every day. I just want to say that. I'm not a licensed therapist, but you know what? I think you're doing a good job.
Maybe we'll get back to that a little bit later in the conversation because there are some things I want to say about that, but continue. Yes.
But anyways, look, man, as you know, I've, in an effort to not be emotionally avoidant for myself and to, because death terrifies me still, despite my deep spiritual beliefs, that is why I created this show. Mm. It's why I started doing My Last Days. There's a quote in the Baha'i Writings where Baha'u'llah says that I have made death a messenger of joy for thee. Mm. Wherefore dost thou grieve? And this idea of, like, how can death be joyful? That doesn't make any sense to me. Like, unless you're like, you know, a guru sitting up on a mountaintop meditating for 10 hours a day and like tapping into, you know, whatever the hell people tap into when they do ayahuasca. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, how can death be joyful? And it was through meditating on death that I came up with My Last Days and this idea of, like, well, how do people that are faced with their own mortality, with like a short period of time to live, how do they find so much joy? What the hell is the secret sauce to that? And that's really what My Last Days is about. So when I met Zach, he was a 17-year-old kid with big dreams. He just had this song, like, kind of hit virally. He wrote it to say goodbye to the people he loved. Mm. And when I was hanging out with him, very similar to my time with Claire Wineland, but when I was hanging out with Zach, there was just something so effortlessly joyful about him.
Yeah.
And it was like, he wasn't trying, he wasn't putting anything on. He wasn't like trying to, he was just this normal kid who found out he was dying, made a choice to live, and then everybody was just attracted to. And I think that's what it was. Is he wasn't trying to be like a little Buddha or like a spiritual teacher. He was just like, no, it's really simple. I just want to make people happy. And when a 17-year-old can distill these like deep spiritual ideas and principles into like a nonchalant comment like that and have it hit you, I knew that there was something magical about him because he is all of us. Like, he's all of us. He's like the light, joyful part of all of us. His mom is all of us. His sister is all of us. His his Sammy, his best friend and writing partner is all of us, mm-hmm. and his girlfriend is all of us. We've all been one of these characters. And I felt that universally mixed with music, there was an opportunity here to really touch and affect people in a deep and meaningful way.
Mm. The crazy thing about the way, Justin, that you describe Zach, I feel like you, number one, captured the essence of who I think Zach was really well in the movie Clouds. But Taylor and Jer, I bet that you guys probably were thinking the same thing. But when I watched that movie last night, I couldn't help but think about our friend Brandon, who,
oh my God, the parallels were just,
who also yeah. lived with an osteosarcoma, is somebody that we met through the podcast, who became yeah. our best friend, who
yeah. oh, no way.
Eventually he died of cancer. And it was like the parallels in the story, not only like is that, forget even if we knew Brandon, like that movie was going to be an emotional roller coaster for me anyway, but yeah. the parallels and like the essence of who Zach was and the essence of who Brandon was, oh man, it just hit yeah. so deep for me. It was,
yeah. and yeah. yeah, I mean, anyone who's like been an OG Sick Boy listener from the beginning, like when you watch this movie, because Brandon, you know, Brandon's been on the show more than any other guest at this point, and because his cancer kept coming back and we just kept having him on. Mm. And you're going to watch this film and definitely see Brandon in Zach. You know, it was so jarring for me this morning, because I wasn't anticipating that.
Me neither.
I didn't prep myself for how much I was going to see, but it's like you said, Justin, like the characters in that film are all like
right.
The thing that yeah. I loved about the movie so much is that it is all of us, you know,
mm-hmm.
like one of the, I was having a discussion with my partner after we watched it. And one of the things that we were talking about was like how, and I really appreciate this part of the film, was that every character had their own process to what they were dealing with, which mm-hmm. was, you know, which was their friend or their brother or their son mm-hmm. about to pass away from cancer. And it, you really got to see into each one of their own unique processes of dealing with something that's so hard. And I think like coming back to this, like emotionally avoidant thing, I think that's, that's why the movie was so difficult for me, because Zach says this in his episode of My Last Days, where he mentions how he has closure to his own death, but Sammy, yeah. Sammy doesn't. Yeah. And that's the fucking hardest thing. That's the hardest thing for someone who has come to terms with their mortality. It's not that you're going to die. It's that, oh man, you got to put all these people through such hard times, you know? And yeah. so to see in the film, to see each one of the people in his life and to see them through that hard time, that was something that I just thought was really, really beautifully done.
Thanks, man. It was also one of the more challenging parts of making the movie, because you only have so much real estate when you make a film.
Mm.
And it, it's a Hollywood movie, so obviously they want more romance and, you know, these types of things, but you need to give each character their arc, you know, and that was really, really challenging. But I've been getting a lot of texts the last couple of days, and it's interesting you mentioned that about your friend, and I'm so sorry about Brandon, because it's so rough, as you know, like we've all, you know, we're all in this similar kind of parallel space together. But I'm getting a lot of texts from people saying how much they saw, insert their best friend here, in Zach.
Right, right.
Like how much Zach reminded them of this person they lost, or this. And it's really been touching to me. And that's what I think, that's one of Zach's, I think, gifts, is that he was so unique, but also so similar to all of us. It's almost like he had all the best qualities that we all have. And he wasn't perfect. His family is very clear about how flawed he was, and like, you know, and they tease him, you know, still today about how big his ego was and how much he would have loved this, because like, you know, he was a showboat. He would have been like, you know, but he was also like a 17-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Anyways, I appreciate hearing that. I'm happy that Brandon was in there.
I think that's the thing that like when I was watching it, there like I obviously saw Brandon in the character, but the movie like it's obviously a sad story, but it's inspirational at the same time. But the sadness that came with inside of me, like the reason why I was bawling the entire time watching it was because I was thinking about all of the people in the world right now that are dealing with these terminal diagnoses and know that they're end of life, especially teenagers. Ooh. And all of the people who are really here right now dealing with that. And like, that was the thing that just like emotionally rocked me so hard. The story is beautiful. And obviously you get sort of like engulfed with the story that you're watching, but that fact that there are real people really living and experiencing that right now is so hard for me to, you know, come to terms with myself. And it's a reality that we all face. Like we're all going to die. And there is the conversation when he's having with his mom and she's like, you know, if we take each day for granted, like none of us is guaranteed tomorrow. And I think that's a thing that we all forget all the time.
Yeah. There was something in that conversation with his mom that struck me when she gave him that piece of advice, you know, maybe this is an opportunity for you to forget about, you know, all the shit that we have to, that everybody deals with on a day-to-day basis. And I was thinking about how our lives get caught up in these sort of like cyclical, you know, a lot of like seemingly non-important tasks when you really zoom out and look at the big picture. But like, that is a symptom of like planning accordingly based on the assumption that we are, that like the end of our lives is like way, way down the road in the future. So, you know, we rationalize making space for these things that might not be super important, but we do anyway, because, you know, death is way away. And then when you take that date much closer to where you sit right now, things become very different. And that was a really beautiful moment between Zach and his mom. Justin, I wanted to ask you about like in your, from your director's chair, I mean, with 5 feet apart and with this film, the ability with which you are able to tell a story that I feel like films have had a really challenging time like hitting the nail on the head with in the past, like with both of these films, young characters dealing with illness, and telling that story from a youth perspective that doesn't take the like youth angle, I suppose, and where it speaks this story that it doesn't matter how old you are. You could be young, you could be really old, you could be somewhere in between, but you feel it on every level. There's not a, you know, it's not a, obviously it's dealing with heavy subject matter, but you're able to tell this story in such a way and also find these incredible actors that are able to fill the shoes of these characters in ways that I am frankly blown away by, because I see this story and I go, man, that's a hard story to tell with the feeling that it deserves. And you do it in such a great way. So what is that process like from the director's chair, and how do you go through what's like the casting process like for finding people that can pull this shit off? Cause it is very hard.
First of all, thank you. I really appreciate that. That's, you know, it is so hard. And there's a reason why critics hate these kinds of movies, you know, because they've seen them over and over again. And they're so often, I don't know. It's like they can fall into, I don't even know if this is a category, but like illness porn or something. It's like,
yeah, right. Yeah. Inspiration porn.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. And I think we're all kind of allergic to that, you know, like we've all seen those and a lot of people love them, but like those Christian movies where they're like, you know, that Bible verse goes at the right time and the music swells and this person cries and like, then they're done, you know, and the light shines. So we all have we've seen all the movies. And for me, this was just about stripping it down and trying to help people experience, I think, what I've physically experienced from people and like from my experience, like walking and holding the hands of these real people, like, you know, people, you know, like Jeremy, but far more sick than Jeremy. And
it's not a competition, okay? whatever.
No, but everybody deals with it in their own way. And I guess what it comes down to is, I would say authenticity, but I really believe that everybody's striving to be authentic right now, and that means that nobody is. So I said sincerity, because it's more heart-based, I think. And really what it comes down to is, like, what would really happen? Act as if. sorry, I was yelling a lot yesterday when Zach hit number one, which we can talk about too.
Definitely.
So my voice is gone. So yeah, man, it's a combination of that, and it's just really trying to figure out, like, how do I bring an audience, like, into the front seat of what it's like to drive in the car with somebody that's going through this. And it just comes down to, like, stripping away as many genre, you know, tropey things as possible and trying to get straight to the heart of the matter. You know, it's very, you know, you find yourself when you're writing a movie like this, and we had a wonderful writer, Kara Holden, but you get in these situations and the dialogue that comes out just lends itself to being cheesy. It just does. It's because so many of the things we say in real life, if you were watching it, are cheesy. And the funny thing is, it's like, and that's one of the things I don't think critics and, like, movie reviewers really understand, is if you were to hold a camera to your actual life and film yourself, the shit we say would be cringeworthy.
Oh, when I'm with my partner and, like, looking into her eyes, the things that come out of my mouth, if I saw that on screen, I'd go, oh, are you kidding?
And
oh,
that's
my
what's
God.
So, and that's what's so frustrating to me about the filmmaking process, is you're expected to make a movie that imitates life, yet we're not allowed to have the things said in our lives that we would actually say, or that were said. So, you know, this is based on a real story, a real book. A lot of the things that Zach said, I couldn't put in the movie. Because I knew that it would turn people off, or, like, critics would just, like, destroy it. So a lot of it was spending time stripping it away and finding ways to just show it with emotion. And, like, to allow silence to exist with these young, because silence exists a lot in these situations. And also, like, the reality of, you know, there's a scene with Sammy and Zach where they're joking, and they're on the football field, and Sammy's like, we don't have to do this. And he's like, what are you talking about? He's like, you know, make something funny when it's not. And that's a real thing, right? Like, teenagers, we joke through a lot of things. As you guys know, this is a comedy podcast, right? We joke through it because it helps. But then there's also times when we don't want to joke, when we just want to, like, allow ourselves to feel, which is probably what your therapist is getting at, right?
I think that's what he's saying.
So it's just, again, it's stripping away all that, and then trying to, like, to zero in on what we're actually saying and what we're feeling. And in terms of casting, it's really hard. You know, you have to, I put these actors through the gauntlet to make sure that they were, you know, they came in multiple times and I threw stuff at them, not literally, or, figuratively, but I put them through a lot of different challenging exercises in their auditions. And I, you know, threw out random things that I would never ask them to do just to see if they could do it. And we narrowed it down to the best actors I could find that captured the essence of who they were. But the other part of your question I just want to get at is, you talk about from the directing chair. And for this movie in particular, I really believe that artists in general, but specifically us filmmakers, we're instruments. And you cannot plan for a movie. You prep your movie and then you show up and there's hundreds of people that are there on the day working for you. You have actors. And a lot of it is just then praying that it's going to work out or looking for inspiration. And every actor, every person on that set has their own connection and channel to God. So as a filmmaker, it's really more about being a conductor and at the same time an instrument and allowing everybody else's creativity to flow. And what I found was that when I detached from it and I allowed the actors to have ideas, the prop master, the set designer, when I opened it up to true collaboration, Zach was able to work through every person on that set. And that's why I had a director's chair made for Zach. It had his name on it. And it was sitting next to me empty the entire time. So every day on set, wherever my chair was, the prop master moved Zach's chair next to mine, and nobody was allowed to sit in it because I told everybody that Zach is sitting in it. And just the weight of that and knowing that he's there. And then if we couldn't figure out an answer, I said, ask him. Oh, it'll magically work out. And time and time again, Zach showed up and unexplainable things happened. Mm. And I think for me, that's the secret sauce. And who knows if I can, you know, and I have my own imposter syndrome when it comes to filmmaking. I don't know how I pull this shit off. I have no idea why it works.
Sure.
But I pour my heart into it. I try to create an environment and I allow, in this case, Zach to come through to make sure we're telling his story the way that he wants to. Mm-hmm.
I'm so curious about your like emotional experience in directing this movie and going through the entire process from promising Zach that you were going to make the best effort to share his story and share his music before he died to like being where you are today. What type of pressure did you feel on yourself? And like, how do you manage that emotional like weight? I imagine
you see the gray hair, man. I got a lot more gray hair than after I talked to you guys last time. Yep.
People can't see where it's an audio podcast, but if you were looking at the screen, Justin is sporting a long, long, just white, right. White beard. And
Uma Thurman's master from Kill Bill.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, I became Santa Claus.
did you feel like you put this pressure on yourself, and how did you bear that?
So much
that
pressure, Brian. I don't know. It was tons of pressure. Look, the first time we were kids. I was 29, 30, it was 29 when he passed away, and I had, you know, the documentary cost $10,000. Like my house was going into foreclosure. Like I'd given up acting and to tell these stories for a year. And, you know, I was partnered with Soul Pancake, and like, we had no idea if anybody was going to watch the show. So when I made him that promise, it was like, I promise I'm going to do this for you and I'm going to keep telling your story and just make sure everybody knows it. So when the documentary came out, we did everything we could to make it seem like we didn't know if it was going to really get seen. Mm. I mean, I think the most views that show had was maybe like 500,000 or 750,000 views, which, you know, on YouTube 7-8 years ago at a time when everybody was watching like cat videos and, you know, music videos, it was a big deal for a show that was about life told by people who were dying. So when it hit 10 million views overnight, wow. It was like, and his song hit number one. It was just like, oh, wait, what? And that's actually what led me to start my company. Because I realized, like, wait, people are ready for this. Like, I had this feeling, like, this gut, and I had this belief that audiences are smart. And we're all dealing with these things, but we don't talk about it. And there's only so much that we can run away from, you know? Like, yes, movies and TV shows and a lot of this stuff is escapism, but why not escape and also allow us to confront things that maybe we need to or we didn't know we needed to? So when this happened and people were sharing it and watching it, like it kind of confirmed my thesis that they're like people are hungry for more meaningful content. So when it came down to, you know, when his mom wrote the book and I reached out, I said, hey, I'd love to do this. I wasn't even thinking about the promise at that point. I was just thinking about like people need this. And it was in the making of the movie, once it was already getting made, that I remembered like, oh, wow, I did promise him this. And like, shit, I got to keep my promise. And it was just an extra fuel. But the burden wasn't in the promise. The burden and the pressure was in the family. Because like, this isn't a story from like World War II, where we're like recreating people that like most of them are like 90 years old now.
Yeah.
This isn't like a story from the 80s or the 90s. This is from 2013. Like the 18-year-olds are now 24.
Yeah.
25 years old. You know, they're at the beginning of their lives and the family still has Zach's room perfect. It's like a shrine to him, and like I had to do justice for them. Like and capture the essence of their story and also for the community of Minnesota and Stillwater, who really were instrumental in propping Zach up and allowing this to happen. Like, this is their story. So it was really challenging because every single person had ownership of what happened to Zach, because Zach was the sum of his parts. They all helped him become this kid who the world knew about. I mean, that's how I found him, right? I found him because CNN did a story about his song right when he was starting to go viral. But that was only because, you know, a guy named Carl helped him produce the song. Mm-hmm. A guy named Dan at the radio station at KS95 put him on the radio. And all these individual people played a role in him becoming who he was. So it's like the pressure was, how do I honor everybody? And that was the killer. Mm-hmm. And making sure the mom and dad, Laura and Rob, were happy. Like, yeah. That was a lot. But they are. So
was the teacher a real person? Like, is that character great. Based off a real person? Because
he was. So
but I love that guy.
He was not a black guy. He was not Lil Rel. He was a so white, well nerdy, awesome science teacher.
Yeah.
He was just hilarious and played music and loved Zach. Yeah. I actually met him when I made the first documentary. Yeah. And we actually combined two roles into that teacher because we needed somebody to help us in the compression of events, kind of get Zach to BMI and like get the music out there.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
Really, it was a group of people that did that.
Okay,
but you
okay.
You don't have 4 hours to tell the story.
Yeah,
Lil Rel was amazing.
Your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Speaking of music, you know, like music obviously played a huge role in the film. The music was so well done. Zach, for people who aren't familiar with Zach's story, he wrote a song that went viral while he was in the midst of dealing with his terminal cancer diagnosis. Like you had said, this is how you kind of stumbled into his story. Earlier you were talking about how your voice is shot. Did Zach's song go number one again, or what you said he went number one? What happened?
So 7 years ago, right after his documentary went viral, his song hit number one on iTunes, and he became one of the first artists ever to hit number one without a record label. He was unsigned. He never got signed to a label. He was signed to a publishing contract at BMI.
Sure,
but he had no label. So he became one of the first unsigned artists ever to hit number one. And yesterday at noon, he hit number one again.
Oh, yeah.
And he made history. And so the movie came out on Friday. And I had these like dreams of like these goals. And we found on this interview that I had done, this BTS interview, where I'm talking about how like I had this super far-fetched dream that maybe if the movie like did really well, he would hit number one again. The movie came out Friday. Saturday, I woke up and he was number 25.
I saw that you posted on that.
Wow.
So I said, holy shit.
Yeah. Like,
it's so hard to in 2020 to break in to the top 100. Like, you're competing with songs from TikTok and like all kinds of stuff. And from Saturday at noon to Sunday at noon, which yesterday it was my son's third birthday, Maxwell's third birthday. Sunday at noon, he hit number one again.
Oh,
and
he
like displaced Justin Bieber.
He just
climbed and climbed and climbed and climbed. And all my friends were posting, and we got like, everybody was like, download the song.
Yeah.
And what was happening, what we found was people were watching the movie so touched by him and going, they weren't looking for like the recreation of our song.
No.
They wanted to hear the real one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So then when they downloaded it on their own.
Yeah.
And the magic happened again. He just became the first unsigned artist to ever hit number one twice after his death in the same decade.
So wild. Yeah.
Like, it's amazing. I love that. Oh.
I saw your Insta live with the actress that played Claire in 5 Feet Apart. Haley? Yeah. I saw it. And when you got her to buy it, I bought it on iTunes too at the same time.
Yeah.
I was watching all day yesterday, like rooting for it to go to
I pulled all the cards out yesterday, man. I was like, all right, friends, been saving these favors.
I think that's my favorite. That's one of my favorite things is it doesn't, it's this, it's like the process or the series of events that speaks to so much. Like it's not just that a lot of people saw the movie. It's a lot of people saw the movie and were touched by the movie. Mm. And then they were touched by it. So then it gets over and they go and they take another action. And then they take another action by talking about it on social media, which then more people go and watch it. More people are touched by it. And it's like the process that, like, I mean, it's like a funnel, and like so many people end up taking action like down the line. And it's not just going and seeing the movie. I mean, it speaks to obviously how well the movie is doing and that people are watching it, but then also just the level of emotion and attachment that people are feeling for the characters and the story.
It makes me think
comes from the heart.
Well, I was going to say, it makes me think about the fundraiser, you know, and how much effect is this going to have now down the road on that, you know, like
that's the whole goal is, you know, part of my promise was that we would continue to raise money for his fund. Yeah. So what's amazing about this is the money from that download, Zach's portion goes and gets donated to his cancer research fund.
That's awesome.
And one of the things I've been saying, and I said to the crew as we were making this, is, you know, in our business, specifically entertainment, it's always like, oh, well, we're not curing cancer, so relax. You know, and I'm like, well, why not?
Yeah.
Why aren't we? Why aren't we trying to cure cancer? Why aren't we trying to end racism? Like, why aren't we, why aren't we doing these things with our business? And I think that we're starting to see a shift. And the fact that his song hit number one again, I don't even know how many downloads that is, but that means that, you know, 40% of that is going to cancer research. Like that's what we saw with, you know, 5 Feet Apart, and how, 3% of Americans even knew what cystic fibrosis was. They thought it was MS. As you know, Jeremy, like how many times did you have to explain what you had to somebody? Mm-hmm. And I actually haven't asked you, but I'm assuming that maybe it's a little bit less now since it became so mainstream.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Like that movie was such a, it was wild. It was wild to like, you know, it's like, it reminds me of my dog, Bigby, who passed away. He's a French Mastiff. And when I would walk down the street, all the time, people would go, "Turner and Hooch." And I go, it's Bigby, but he's a hooch. And it was kind of the same effect with 5 Feet Apart, where I'd be talking about, I have cystic fibrosis, and they're like, 5 Feet Apart.
Haven't fallen into a frozen lake yet.
Jared, something came up for me, something that came up for me watching the movie was a thought on you and kind of the, when I reflected on that, it was really that in the movie, I remember watching the movie when we saw it in theaters in LA and
you're referring to 5 Feet Apart.
To 5 Feet Apart, and I remember you being very moved because, you know, you saw yourself in the film and there was representation there and you thought, oh man, I thought that I was always represented in film because of the color of my skin you're there, but again, like on this level, you haven't been and you recognize that and you were very moved by it. And something that moved me in the film last night, it was, again, in thinking of Brandon and his experience was that you are hitting on notes that a lot of films don't, even if their subject matter is illness or death, that there's some very, very personal notes that those films aren't hitting on and yours are. And one such note was when he was given when he got back to school after surgery and he was given the essay, the college essay.
And that really happened.
And I was sitting there when he said, "I want you to write your college essay," I immediately thought, but he's not going to college. Mm-hmm. And I immediately then thought of you, Jer, and thinking about like when you were a kid and people saying things like, "What do you want to do when you get older? Mm-hmm. What do you like? How many kids do you want to have? What," like all these things that are like future you, what are they up to? And you feeling like,
what future?
That doesn't exist for me.
Yeah.
How much of you did you see yourself in that, Jared? Like, did you see yourself in that moment? Because like you just popped in, you were so front and center for me in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was like, that was one of maybe like 153 times in the movie where I started to sob. And I began sobbing because I, you know, to see Zach's character sit there and to watch his teacher saying, you know, giving him these prompts to think about, to write. I've been in that exact spot. I've been in that exact mm-hmm. moment. I have the essay that I wrote when I was in school that literally, like, verbatim says, like, what's the point of getting married if what's the point of getting married and having kids if I'm not even going to be around to be a father, like, you know? And like, to see what really ripped my heart open was like to see a young kid and the wheels turning in his head, because I've been there. Like, I've had those wheels turning, and it's such a, that is a massively pivotal moment in my life, you know, mm-hmm. as would have been for Zach.
That so many people take for granted.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to come back to a point that you mentioned earlier, Justin, about that, the scene on the field, and how, when Sammy says to Zach that, you know, like, you don't need to, like, hide from those feelings. Like, you know, you don't feel like you need to make a joke of everything. And, I know that, like, laughter is a fundamental value for this podcast, and we're always trying to bring humor to the conversations that we have, but I'm always conscientious of the fact that, like, I'm always asking myself, like, is this moment of laughter hiding anything that's deeper here that needs potentially to come to the surface? Mm-hmm. And I remember that Brandon was really good at making jokes and creating the sense of levity, but then watching the movie last night, I was reminded of, like, maybe there were moments where he was having a harder go, and could I have, you know, dug a little bit deeper to see if there was an opportunity there to, you know, like, comfort him if he was dealing with something that I might not have, you know, been aware of, because he tried to, you know, shelter me from that. And, but I'm also, like, on the same note, you've been so great at, with 5 Feet Apart and with Clouds, of incorporating humor into the storyline and to relieve some of that tension during some of the heavier scenes with a moment of laughter, either during or after. And I'm wondering how you see laughter or humor as a part of, like, dealing with some of the biggest challenges that we face in our lives, and why you feel that it's been so important to include in these stories.
First of all, don't go there too much with your buddy, because, you know,
yeah, he would have, I'm an overthinker. So
if he would have wanted to talk about it, he would have.
That's my problem with my with my therapist. She's always like, "You're overthinking things." Like, know. It's all right.
We all do, man. It's definitely a male trait. So, in terms of comedy, I think, look, I learned from being around my friends who were fucking funny. Mm. Like, Zach, the whole time I was there, made fun of me when I made that documentary the first time, which is why there's a little Easter egg at the beginning. When they're watching TV, they're watching an episode of Suite Life from Zach and Cody, and I am in it. So if you go back and watch it, it's me as a fencing instructor, just with the worst accent you've ever heard. Right. And the reason I put it in there was because when I got there, Zach did my terrible Spanish accent the whole time and called me Diego. He made fun of me the whole time. He's like, "Hey, Diego, hey, hey." And he did this little wiggle thing. And I'm like, I got to put that in there. Oh, nobody else will know.
That's
a lot of people
branded.
Noticed me on the TV, but it's because that was one of my connections with him. Like, he just teased me, and that was what he did. Like, he joked and he joked. And then when it came time to do the interview, he showed up and he was still funny, and he would make funny comments, and then he would get super deep and reflective and emotional, and, you know, but in his personal life, he was more funny than he was serious. And that was how he coped. He was also 17. Mm-hmm. Claire was fucking funny.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the people that have had the the hardest situations in life have developed a sense of humor to help them deal with it, Jeremy, which is why, you know, you are hilarious. It's part defense mechanism, but also part of who you are, probably, because you've had to find a way to use comedy for other people, not even for yourself. Mm. I'm sure a lot of it is making other people feel comfortable.
Well, again, yeah, it comes back to that point of like, I'm good with my death. I got to make sure you guys are too, you know, like, what other tools do I have? Like finding levity within that is all I know. It's the only way I know how to do it. You know,
I totally appreciate
it's it's one of the most beautiful ways to do it also, because we can all relate with something that's funny. And that's why I think that's why these movies in many ways, they do leave you exhausted at the end, because you are laughing. And when the laughs hit, they hit hard. It's like taking a little pressure off, like the pressure builds, and then someone says something and you just laugh, like Mr. Weaver on the football field when he says, like, man, I miss you without eyebrows.
and then he just goes on this rant about his alien face.
It's like, I don't know if you're surprised or you're happy or, you know, I do a terrible overall. But like, I kept the whole rant in there because it just kept getting funnier. Because you needed it. And then right after that, he's terminal.
Yeah.
Cancer didn't work.
Yeah.
And when you put those two things together in a scene, I think that's what life's like.
Mm-hmm.
Like you laugh, and you cry. And the same thing happens like in like there's a sexy scene with Zach and Amy. And they're making out, and it's hot and steamy. And then she sees his scar.
Mm.
And you can see her, and my direction was like, try to push past it, but you can't. Because in that moment, you're like, sure, maybe it would be your first time. Maybe you guys would have sex. Like, maybe you'd share this beautiful romantic moment. But all you see is his scar. And that means all you see is that he's not going to be around.
Yeah.
And what is that like to try to push past that moment in that scene for 17-year-olds? And that's why that's one of my favorite scenes. Because you see, like, they so badly want to connect. And then she sees the other scar. And then that turns Zach, like, makes him turn inside out. And then he starts being like, wait, I can't do this to her. He's not thinking about himself. Mm-hmm. He's like, I can't do this to her. Mm-hmm. And then he leaves. And then she's like, what the fuck just happened? Mm-hmm. And then he's driving in the car and he says one thing. He says, why? He's asking like, why me? Like, why?
Mm-hmm.
Questions I'm assuming maybe, Jeremy, you've asked at one point in your life. And a lot of people, you know, because you ask why is this happening? And that's what it's all about. And then the next scene is funny. Well, after the parents, then they get to the BMI stuff, and there's funny moments that happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that's what life is. It's never just this one super. I don't want to make depressing movies that at the end of it you feel like you can't pick yourself off the floor and that the world is going to end and you're hopeless. I want to make movies that tackle real life situations and then bring you like a side dish of hope
mm-hmm.
and like inspiration. Because if Zach can do that with his life, why can't we? Why can't you? Why can't you?
You know what? I got to say, Justin, that little piece that you just threw down there, it completely flipped the switch in my head, because again, I avoid those types of movies. And when the movie, I'm going to be very honest with you, when the movie was done about an hour and 20 minutes ago, I turned to my partner and I go, who the fuck volunteers to sit through something like this? I said to her, this is how you feel about horror films. This is how I feel about these kinds of movies. Cause she hates horror films.
Cause you're living in it.
And now I hear you say this and I go, yeah, why wouldn't I want to ride that ride? Why wouldn't I want to have those ups and those downs? Because that is life. I don't want to just watch boring movies where when the movie ends, you know, that the two lead characters aren't going to make it because, you know, they're in the Arctic and they killed the alien. But in killing the alien, they also blew up the rest of the planet. Anyway, the thing, it's a great movie. Just check it out if you haven't seen it. It's wonderful. But no, you're right. Like it is, there is that those ups and downs are, oh man, like as raw as it makes you feel. Like it really does help you go about your day-to-day business and life. Like, yes, I watched it on a Monday goddamn morning thinking afterwards that I set myself up for a depressing week, but like I feel like this week is going to be like one of those weeks where I go, get it in. Like, get in everything you can, dude.
That's what I want, man. I want it to feel like a therapy session. A good therapy session isn't just you crying or like, it's, you might get angry, you might laugh.
It's all of it.
It's like, and you're, and we spend so much of our lives trying to not feel. Like, trying to suppress our feelings or like push it down. Especially as men, we've been socialized to not allow ourselves to feel the things we need to feel. And these movies, if anything, should just like, I want you to have like this involuntary reaction where you touch your face and you're like, wait, I'm crying. Oh shit, I'm crying. Because that's doing something for you. Our children know how to do that. Our children know how to cry when they need something or cry when they're feeling something or cry when they're, or be angry when they're angry. That's why they have a tantrum and then 5 seconds later they're laughing and smiling. Because it's like, it's absolutely just pure and biological and it's there for them. But we've been socialized to start to repress those things. So I hope these movies give people a chance to feel, especially right now, because we're numb. Like after this pandemic and after what's happening in the world and politically and climate change and all of the stuff that we're looking at and we're saying like, is there even hope? Like, are we going to blow ourselves up? Like, we need to feel these things. When we feel, we allow ourselves to also be able to feel for other people. And like, it's like a compassion gene is triggered. And it's like suddenly you're like, all this armor, right? It's like, there's a, by the way, a fantastic book for us therapy folks, The Knight and Rusty Armor. I believe every man should read it. The Knight and Rusty Armor. It'll take you an hour. We spend our lives putting on this armor. And at the end of this book, it's so sweet. Like the only thing that, that gets rid of our armor are the tears that we've been repressing and holding, because the armor has been the very thing that has not been allowing us to feel. So I want to make movies that help people shed their armor. That's what the goal is.
Well, you Justin, the message of hope that that you are left with in this movie, that you know isn't the all too often message of hope that you see in movies, which is like maybe the person will live, but the message of knowing, accepting, meditating, ruminating on our own mortality can leave us with a greater sense of how to live our lives. And and what I think brought me full circle with watching this film last night and knowing you and knowing that you're behind, you know, you're behind the scenes pulling the strings, and was that when we met you, what was that, two years ago, year and a half ago, whatever it was, we were down in LA and we were, our primary reason for being down there was to shoot some stuff for a potential show that was getting shopped around, and we were being asked questions by people all the time, like to really focus in on what that message was that we wanted to send. And we kept on coming back to the exact same thing. I was like, if you had to boil it down to one thing, like what is Sick Boy trying to do? And it was like, and we kept on coming back to, through your death, learn how to live through acquainting yourself with your death, with your mortality. And you package that in such an amazing way. Before we go, you mentioned it there. I'm assuming that this book had, I read a post that you made the other day, and it sounds like this book you just read was a little bit of that was in this post, that you have got a book deal.
Yeah.
That's coming up. Do you want to, is that something that you want to chat about?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, we can. Yeah. And I'm releasing my first book with HarperCollins, in April, called Man Enough, Undefining My Masculinity. And, really excited about it. I'm scared. It's like a super raw, very vulnerable book where I'm just using my experiences as a man to try to open conversations for other men. A lot of that, and a lot of the book is very much about the armor that we put on and my learning how to take it off at the end of the day. And then we're going to turn that into a middle grade book as well for young boys.
Yeah, sweet.
Nine to 12. Because that's really where it starts. And then there's going to be a children's book called I Want You to Know That it's really just like a parent to child book. It's not just for boys. It's for, it's just a bunch of sweet things. And it's also cathartic for me because, you know, I'm, all these themes are tied together, by the way, like all of these themes with masculinity, with like the movies that I'm trying to make, with my last days, they're all tied together. And it's, at the end of the day, it's all about how do we become the best people? You know, how do we leave a legacy behind that's not just about like what we did, but how we made people feel and how we acted and our service. And, you know, and look, if we think about our mortality, if we think about the way we spend our time, and I think about this a lot, and Jeremy, I don't know if you do or if you guys do because of Jeremy, but like screen time becomes a subtraction for me of things I could be, of things I could be doing to make the world better, of time I could be spending with my family. You know, it's little things. Like if I've spent 6 hours a day on my phone, how much of that time was actually just numb, wasted mess? Can I cut that in half and make sure that it's productive, and then the other half is spent having conversations? What are we actually doing with the time that we have? We have 24 hours in a day, and everybody says we don't have time. I don't have time for this. I don't have time for this. The question becomes like, well, how are we spending our time? And until we start to think about the fact that we have an end time, how will we ever like start to reprioritize that? Because the second you find out you have 3 months to live, suddenly every minute counts. But suddenly for some reason, because we think we have 70 years to live or 50 years to live, well, that number just exponentially grows. And then like 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there doesn't mean a lot. But anybody who looks at their finances or investments know that $5 here and $5 here adds up quite a bit. And I think that's the one way we can start to reprioritize and think about our time. And then the last thing I want to say,
and it's based on what you brought up earlier, is at the end of the day, this movie will hopefully be not just about unlocking emotions and helping us all feel, it will also hopefully contribute to the end of osteosarcoma, because it is one of the most underfunded types of cancers. And my hope and my prayer is that if you are inspired by Zach and his mission, then you join his movement. And you can do that at zachsmovement.org. Just before he died, he set up a fund in his name, which is where the proceeds from his music go to. And it all goes to osteosarcoma research. And since his death, they've raised over $2 million and they are actively getting closer to identifying the genomes that cause it. And they're doing amazing research. His best friend works for the organization. His mom works there. His sister's now interning there. It's been an amazing thing to witness. So check out zachsmovement.org. And thank you guys so much for having me on again. I appreciate you all so much.
It's always a pleasure, Justin.
Thank you.
Can't wait to talk to you again. And again, folks, go check out the movie. It is on Disney Plus right now. You can stream it wherever you live, wherever you are. And if I might say, the route I took was I watched My Last Days, his episode, right before I started the film. So if you want to really take a good sledgehammer straight to the heart, that's the route that I would go. But anyway, that's just me.
That's a big one.
Justin, love you, buddy. Thank you so much for this.
Love you, man. Yeah. Thank you guys so much.
Take
good
care.
To see y'all.
Yeah, thank take
you.
Care.
See you.
Peace.
See you, buddy.
Well, there we go. That was it. Talking to our boy, JB, Just Baldone, or also known as Jebadololo, to really close friends.
That's, I call him Jay Baldy.
Yeah, Jay Baldy. That was Just Baldone, and that was us talking about his new movie, Clouds, which, again, I cannot stress enough, you should subject yourself to it. It is on Disney Plus, streaming right now. And I think if you've never done the Disney Plus thing yet, also this Disney Plus is not paying us to say this.
Not sponsored.
This is not sponsored. but it's great. The Mandalorian, awesome. The Simpsons, wicked. And now Clouds. So there's no reason not to add it to your subscription shopping cart.
This podcast is brought to you.
Isn't the Mandalorian season 2 coming out soon?
Is it?
It is.
Here it is. Ooh, I hear it is very soon.
Yeah, it's dropping soon. I think I heard last week that they're going to do a special reveal for the season trailer on an upcoming NFL game. this week, I think.
Cool. Really riveting stuff, guys. Glad we are touching on that topic right now.
I actually had something that I wanted to bring up during our conversation with Justin, but it wasn't so much geared towards Justin, so I just let it go. But I want to ask you guys about this, specifically you, Jer. We were talking in the episode about the challenge of preparing other people for the day that you die, especially when you live with the terminal diagnosis.
Yeah.
And you were saying that you're not prepared to see your loved ones go through like the process of you dying, right, Jer. And I can imagine that would be really fucking hard. And you know, it's a large part of the movie Clouds. But I was kind of thinking about this idea that like you can't control how other people feel. Like it's impossible for you to control somebody else's feelings. And so the only thing that you can do is really manage your own emotions going through that and try to be this, like, I hate the word rock, but like be this rock for the people going through this. Mm. But I also don't feel like that's the person's responsibility who's dying. I mean, they're already like dealing with this, like probably existential crisis of considering their own mortality. But I wanted to dig into that a little bit deeper, Jer, and like think and ask you about that feeling of worrying about or being sort of concerned with how other people around you handle your death. And like, I know that I'm being pretty presumptuous here, assuming that you're going to die before like me, for example, but like, how do you come to terms with like dealing with the people around you as you plan for your own mortality?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that because I think
that's, do you think that's the most challenging part for you? Because, you know, like you've said so many times that you've sort of like, I mean, you have these moments where you come to terms with your own death, the fact that you're going to die, but you can't control how other people around you handle that.
Yeah.
Do you think you have to prepare for that?
It's something that I've been thinking about. You know what? Something happened the other night that I don't think I brought up to you guys. I was sitting in the car with my girlfriend and we had just gone to see a CD release party. Our friend Daniel had put out, it released an album, and we went to the album release party, and it was the first time I saw live music in a long time because of COVID, obviously. And it was this really cathartic experience, sitting in a music venue, you know, like watching live music on a stage. It was a moment of like realizing how much we've taken those things for granted in the time that we now live in, where those things are a lot more rare, and for some people like just still non-existent. And so on the drive home, there's this new thing that Spotify has going on, which is like a time capsule playlist. And watching Daniel play, there was this sort of like nostalgic feeling of listening to that music. And on the drive home, I was like, this would be nice, like go through the time capsule and listen to these old songs that Spotify, the algorithm seems to know that like I fucking love these jams. And it was really cool. Yeah. Like these songs were playing and I was going, oh my God, yeah, this is awesome. This is amazing. Mm-hmm. And then we pull into the driveway and we were finishing one song and then it went on to the next song. It went on to this Tragically Hip track. And Leah was like, oh, I love this song. Let's just stay and listen to this. And I was like, yeah. And then like really suddenly I started feeling like, no. I don't like, this doesn't feel good. And I just like, I was like, nah, you know what? I don't want to do this. And I turned it off and it was like kind of weird. And we got out of the car and I came inside and I was like, what the fuck was that?
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about, I was like, why did I react that way? And I got really emotional. Like I was, my eyes were like full of water. I was about to sob. And Leah obviously like noticed something was up. And I think she asked like, hey, is everything like, what's up? Is everything okay? And I think my response was like, I don't think I want to go there right now. I don't think I want to talk about it right now. And so I spent the next day thinking about what that was. And I made the realization that like since Gord Downie has died, I've actually been avoiding his music. Because the feeling, the very visceral feeling that I had that week when he was like playing his last show and like his death was like at the forefront of like every fucking Canadian's mind, and seeing the way that people were responding to that, that was a really like emotionally heavy moment for me. Because I was noticing how this one person and his death was having this like emotional, this like cascading wave of emotion riding across anyone who he's ever touched. Mm-hmm. And it made me think about, you know, like, and then Brandon's death, it was like at his funeral and seeing this building that becomes literally over flooded with humans who have arrived to like remember him, and to see all of the heartbreak and all of the like the, you know, the very like audible mourning that is happening at his funeral, and to see that this one individual has had such a profound effect on all these people's lives, and to see them emoting that way really struck me. And so then I think like through this process of like witnessing other people's death and seeing how it affects the people that those people have touched. And even with Bigby's death, it was kind of the same thing, like seeing Bridie and the way that she grieved over Bigby, because Bigby, you know, he left a mark on her. I started to realize and started to think a lot more about how like, man, when I die, there's people in my life that are going to go through that same experience. And like, I hate that. That is the thing. I wasn't like the scene in Clouds where Zach is standing. I love the scene. He's standing in front of the mirror, and he had just basically, like the day before, just basically found out that he has a it's terminal. There's nothing they can do. And he's standing in the mirror and he's getting dressed, and he mashes his face and like forces this smile, and you can see him forcing it. Like, he's like, I'm going to school today. I need to show up. I need to be like this positive ray of light that I always am. And I'm going to force that onto my face. And you see the struggle there. I was watching that, and that didn't make me feel emotional. That made me, I was like, I it was more of a feeling of like, yeah, dude, fuck yeah. Like, get in there, get it. Mm-hmm. Then seeing any scene that had to do with anybody else other than Zach and their feelings towards what he was going through, those were the scenes that were like tearing my heart out, because mm-hmm. it's the thing that I think I struggle with the most, which is this notion that like, it's going to, like, let's just say hypothetically I do die before the three of you. It's going to suck for you. And I fucking hate that.
The thing that I think about, though, is I can understand all of that. Like, I get it. I totally get it. But I also think that, like, I feel like it at some points it causes you stress to think about that and feel that way, and it just makes you feel shitty to think about that. And
yeah, I can't
we've
listen
talked
to
Gord
Downie anymore. It's like, yeah, well, tragically, yeah. It's like one of my favorite bands of all time, and I can't listen to it.
Well, that's just it. And yeah. and the thing that we know is that death is coming for everyone. We know that. Like, I love that quote from the episode that you did with Bridie when her dad passed away. That grief is the price you pay for loving someone. Mm-hmm. And I had two really personal experiences in my life where it sort of changed the way that I think about how other people feel about situations. One was this situation when I was in India, and I think I've told you guys this story before, but to save like the long version of it, basically I got in a fight with this, not a fist fight, but like an argument with a local shop owner about a cell phone charger, and it was really stupid. And it got me like super angry, and I felt super angry. I went back to my yoga teacher and I told him about it, and he said, "You can go apologize then." So I went back and apologized, and it was really heartfelt. And the guy that I apologized to was just like, "Fuck you, get out of here, fuck you, I don't want your apology." And he was just still mad at me. And when I went back to the ashram that I was staying at, I felt so shitty that my apology wasn't received. And so I went back to my yoga teacher again, and he said, "Did you apologize?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Did you do everything you could to show that person that you still cared about them, that you had space for them, that you had love in your life for them?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "That's it. You can't do anything else. You can't change the way that person feels." And the other situation was even more profound. It happened many years later, actually just last year. I had this like thing between my dad and I that has caused a lot of stress and tension in our relationship for the past 15 years. And I have never told him about this thing. It was something that he did. And so last year I finally gathered the courage to talk to him about it. And I was basically asking him to apologize for the way that he made me feel. And it was really hard for me to bring that up. And when I asked him to apologize, he wouldn't.
Right.
And it hurt me so bad that he couldn't understand where I was coming from emotionally. And I was trying so hard to be vulnerable with him to open up and tell him why I felt our relationship has taken this toll for the last 15 years. And I left that day, and I thought back to this conversation that I had with my yoga teacher, and I thought, you know, I told him how I felt. I did everything that I could. I was open and honest about my emotions. Ooh. And he didn't react the way that I had hoped and that I expected him to, but you can't change the way that people will react to things. And so I think about that now, and I think about the stress that, you know, you feel, Jaren, in thinking about your death and how other people will react, and realizing that you can't change the way that they react, but also realizing that the grieving process is something positive that people should feel comfortable going through, and even going through in front of you. You know, you don't really need them to change the way that they react. It's more so the work that you need to do as an individual to be more okay with that, even though it's like probably one of the most challenging things to think about doing.
Yeah. I would add on to that by saying that because of what we do, and we're talking to, and you know, we're talking about death and with people who have faced death or will face death or we're all facing death, but who are facing death, you know, imminently, that what I would say to you, Jer, and for anybody who has that same sort of sentiment, that is like, I don't want to cause the pain that will inevitably be felt when I die and the people who are left have to deal with that, is that I will learn so much from you dying. Mm. I will take so much away from that experience, because I know that I did with Brandon, a fuckload of learning came through that process. And because I'm always a half glass full optimistic kind of thinker, that's when I reflect on Brandon's death, that's what I think of. That's the first thing I think of is love him, and took so much away from that experience, learned a shitload. And even though I'm not getting those new experiences with him physically, I am getting new understandings and new learnings from the experience that we went through dealing with his death. And I know that I'll do that with you or Brian or anybody that like that, anybody that goes before I do. And so I try to look at it at that more like half glass full sort of angle, because yeah, there will be so much to take from that.
Acknowledging that it's also going to be fucking hard.
You know? Yeah, like, super hard. I mean, yeah. And which Brandon is the staple for that, because that was really hard. Like, that was super hard. But ultimately, when I look back on that, I don't go, oh shit, it was, I don't immediately go to how hard it was. I immediately go to how much I learned from it.
Right.
Well, you guys talked about it during the recording, but Justin found Zach through his documentary series, My Last Days. And they actually did a follow-up where they talked to Justin's family and friends, or so not Justin, about Zach's family and friends a year after he died. And it was interesting. I watched it. It was about like 20 minutes. I would recommend watching it. And one of the things, or I guess the consensus that the people he left behind had, was that like he gave them so much. Mm. And you, Jeremy, you give people so much. You give so much to the listeners of this podcast, to your friends, to your family, right? Mm. Like the memories that you leave behind, or the memories that you make while you're alive, like that's what will help. That's what will sustain people. So just, you know, telling people you love them, not forgetting to do those types of things. Like that's, in my mind, that's how you can prepare people for your death, because you never fucking know when you're going to get hit by a truck.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's true.
Yeah, really, yeah, exactly.
And it's true. I do give. And a lot of you out there are taking for free. And so, you know, I just putting it out there, we do have a Patreon. You know, whatever, patreon.com/sickboy. If you feel like you've been taking from me.
If you feel so inclined.
Listen, this is really sweet, guys, but also I feel like this has now turned into an intervention, so I'm gonna move things right along. We have a letter that came in, and I think this letter actually is kind of timely. This is coming from Rike from Norway, or Reik from Norway, or Ricky from Norway. Hi, guys. I just started listening to your Okay, here we go. Hi, guys. I just started listening to your podcast after several recommendations from other sick people, both literally and figuratively. Firstly, I just want to say thanks for providing what I didn't know I needed. People are far too serious about death and illness. I tried to joke about death and my short life as often as possible, if not totally out of line. Haha, that has happened. Just because it's better to laugh than cry, right? And God knows I've cried. I got diagnosed June 17th with breast cancer. I remember that day so well, and as you've described in several episodes, my life flipped, turned upside down. When I went to the hospital... I think what they
Fresh Prince.
Yeah.
Is that a reference to Fresh Prince? Yeah. Okay.
When I went to the hospital that day, I kind of knew I had cancer because my left breast at the moment looked like a shriveled up orange. Jesus. The reason, though, why I did wait was because my boyfriend of almost 4 years was just finishing his treatment. He was diagnosed with stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma almost exactly 1 year before me. He is now in remission, but I just really wasn't up to a full-blown cancer thing with me as well at that time. I'm both incredibly bitter that I waited because it might have changed the outcome, but also happy I did because I don't know if I'd had the strength to handle it as I am doing now. I'm a weird cancer patient who you'd never guess was ill. I work full-time as a sommelier, and I'm starting a 6-year-long psychology program next fall. So I try to plan as if I'm not going to die quite yet. In the meantime, I try to organize fundraisers and just do lots of stuff that sparks joy. Sometimes that means lying in bed the whole day too. Amen. Anyway, thanks again for providing such great product. I guess it is a product. I've been I've binged pretty much all the episodes, and it's really nice to hear people in similar situations who aren't so negative about everything. It's goddamn refreshing. Big hugs from Rikke from Norway. Thank you.
I love that
Rikke,
she's Marie Kondoing her life.
Rick, thank you for sending that to
Rikke.
Us. Very sweet.
I think Rikke. I would Rikke. Say. Rikke. It was definitely a rolled. It's definitely a rolled R.
I didn't learn that in theater school. So
you didn't learn how to roll your R's in theater school?
Can't do it.
You referenced theater school.
You did accents and you can't roll your R's.
I can only do accents that don't roll R's.
You were boasting about your Scottish accent last week.
Scots don't need to roll their R's. Sorry, guys. I got something in my eye and it fucked me up.
I thought your Scottish accent was...
Oi! Blimey! I'm from Scotland! Blimey! Listen, I loved this conversation. I loved this episode. I loved Clouds. Go watch it. It's on Disney Plus. Justin Baldoni, you are a fucking gem. We love you, and can't wait to have you on the podcast again in the future, because I know that that will be a thing. Now that I have your phone number, I'm going to abuse the fuck out of it. Just kidding.
I'm just joking.
All right, guys, let's wrap this shit up and actually get on to our next recording, which is actually our Patreon, a monthly recording that people can watch on Patreon over at patreon.com/sickboy. That's not an ad for our Patreon. I'm just literally stating a fact that that's happening right after this. So. Thank you all so much for listening. That is it for this week.
I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
I'm Lauren.
I'm Jeremy, and this is Sick Boy.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.